Good afternoon, and welcome to the Right to Know Advisory Committee meeting for Thursday, November 17th, 2022. My name is Tom Harnett. I represent House District 83 for two more weeks, which includes the town of Farmingdale and the city of Gardner. And I will begin, as we always do, by having committee members introduce themselves. I'll start with those participating remotely, and we'll call on them in the order that I see them on my screen. And the first would be Chief Gahagan.
Michael Gahagan. I represent law enforcement.
Thank you very much for being here today, Chief. Jim Campbell.
Hi, I'm Jim Campbell. I represent a statewide group whose members are interested in access to information.
Thank you, Jim. Julie Finn.
Hello, everyone. I'm Julie Finn, and I represent the Maine Judicial Branch.
Thank you. And the Honorable Justin Chenette.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Justin Chenette, and I represent members of the public.
Thank you, Justin. And Kevin Martin.
Kevin Martin, I represent state government interests.
Thank you. And now we'll begin introductions for folks that are live and in person today, beginning with Betsy Fitzgerald.
Good afternoon, Betsy Fitzgerald. I represent the counties.
Thank you. Judy Meyer.
Hi, I'm Judy Meyer. I represent Maine's newspaper publishers.
Thank you. John Bolton.
Good afternoon. I'm John Bolton, and I am the Attorney General's designee.
Thank you. Eric Stout.
Eric Stout. I'm the member with background in information technology.
Thank you. And Vicki Wallach.
Vicki Wallach, Maine School Board, the Maine School Superintendent Association.
Thank you. And Linda Clancy.
Good afternoon. I'm Linda Clancy. I represent the Maine Press.
And Cheryl Sanyuk Heinig.
Yes. Good afternoon. My name is Cheryl Sanyuk Heinig, and I'm a representative with legal and professional experience in information and personal privacy.
Thank you. And my committee co-chair, Judiciary Committee, not this committee, Senator Carney.
Thank you very much. I'm Ann Carney. I represent Senate District 29, which includes South Portland, Cape Elizabeth, and a little bit of Scarborough.
Thank you, Senator Carney. And again, my name is Tom Harnett, and I chair the Right to Know Advisory Committee. We are going to begin today with two presentations of reports from the Maine Municipal Association and Public Access Ombudsman Brenda Kelty on the experience of municipalities and state agencies following changes to the Freedom of Access Act, which now requires two free hours of staff time to requesters of public records and change the hourly rate after that. And Colleen, I will turn to you. Should I begin with Neil Goldberg, who is in the audience? Nice to see you again, Neil.
I believe you have this report as the green handout as requested by the committee. Just begin, my name is Neil Goldberg, legislative advocate at Maine Municipal Association. Thanks again for having us back to talk about this. This has been an ongoing conversation in this committee that Maine Municipal Association is happy to be a part of. We were very pleased to see some of the changes to the Freedom of Information Act request policies last session. And so happy to share a little bit of what we're seeing since then. Generally speaking, the public records request process is going smoothly for municipal officials. Right off the bat, what we heard from our members is we're doing this every single day. We're doing this nonstop. Phone calls are coming in, people are coming in requesting records or documents. And this is just part of our ordinary workflow, of which our members are happy to do. They actually look at the public records request as a core tenet of their job. And often the public access officer, frequently the clerk as well, takes that very seriously. And so from a 10,000 foot level, this is a municipal operation of which things are running smoothly. 2 years ago, we offered this committee some information about the cost in which municipalities are incurring to fulfill these requests. Since then, the increase in the hourly rate that is allowable to be charged seems sufficient. The 2 hour free window is capturing truly 99% of all requests that are coming in. And so in those two points, we don't have much to offer. With that said, there are a few things that did come up. In the reasonable nature of requests that take more than 2 hours, and reasonable is obviously used with some judgment here, those are requests in nature that would require compiling of information, creation of spreadsheets, legal review, heavy redactions. And so again, these are reasonable requests that just have a larger administrative burden. And because of that, they take over 2 hours. It was mentioned a few weeks ago in front of this committee about the idea of working with the requesters to narrow the scope or the size of their request. That is common practice at the municipal level. So I'm happy to know that some other individuals and entities are doing it. But when someone comes in genuinely wanting information from a municipal entity and they're having a hard time describing it, what we're hearing from our members is the first question is, well, how can we narrow this down? And if we provide an invoice to a requester and that seems to get a knee-jerk reaction, well, again, maybe we can change the search words or keywords to narrow that down. That is very much common practice. So to what extent are these requests taking more than 2 hours? Well, our survey had a response of about 0.2 requests per month require over 2 hours. So again, generally speaking, nothing to be concerned of here. However, of those requests that require more than 2 hours, a good portion of them are nuisance or disruptive. So we asked in the survey, all right, of that small portion that requires over 2 hours, how long do they take? And it was pretty much, to generalize, a one-third, one-third, one-third split of less than 3 hours, between 3 and 5 hours, and more than 5 hours. And we tried as best we could to drill into those and what is the nature of those, I would say, beyond the normal effort requests. That's what we termed it, beyond the normal effort requests. And again, some of them are reasonable. They are requests that say maybe go back to the 70s on a topic about dog parks, or request a full history of a property dating back to the 1800s. Takes time, but very much reasonable. And so I guess in response to this committee's request, we think things are going pretty well. However, anytime we're going to survey our members, we like to take the opportunity to ask a little bit more sometimes. We have a captive audience. So we ask them, what is the nature of these nuisance requests? And I have never seen our members so quick to jump to respond anecdotally. Within minutes of sending out this survey, about a half a dozen municipal officials called or emailed me directly to say, I'm not comfortable giving you my response in the survey, but I'd like to talk to you one-on-one. And the stories that we heard and collected were generally worrying. Municipal officials fearing for their personal safety, for the safety of their staff. Municipal officials using clauses or sentiments like there's been a weaponization of the FOIA process. And so these sorts of stories started to really collect and gather. And in the shortest of my ability, because I know it wasn't exactly what this committee asked, I used the final section of the report to talk about that evolving nature. And that's on page 3. The sentiment from officials is that there's a growing cohort of the public that is using the FOIA process to intentionally disrupt the municipal operations. We've seen that repeated actually by the Secretary of State most recently in regards to the past elections that were held. Speaking with her, she was saying that there is a rash of copycat requests going on, in which people are sort of taking the lead of an out-of-state party and making requests that truly have no business being asked here in Maine, whether because it doesn't conform with our legal structure or because they're using language and definitions that just aren't commonplace here in Maine. A real red flag that these requests are coming from an outside source. And then, of course, are the newsworthy requests that actually make it into the front page of our media, in which there are restraining orders placed against individuals that have made repeated and threatening nuisance requests. And so while it's only a small subsection of all of them, they are quite alarming and we're seeing an increase in them. Not much else to report. The results were pretty straightforward. I'd be happy to talk about any of them in more specificity, but thank you for your time and appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Neil. We appreciate the thoroughness of your report as always. Are there questions from committee members for Neil Goldberg? If you are participating remotely, please use your electronic hand. If you're in the room, you can just raise your hand. And you've got two hands up. You've got your electronic hand and your real hand up, Eric. So I'll call on you first.
I'm the technology member, so I guess.
You're using all of the available technology.
So, Neil, thanks for your report. You mentioned something that in the small number of cases that requires more than just within a free couple of hours, that sometimes the municipal staff has to assemble things, or you mentioned create a spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking at the FOA law, particularly section 408A that is titled Public Records Available for Inspection and Copying. Mm-hmm. And item 6 on that says no requirement to create new record. An agency or official is not required to create a record that does not exist. So I hear this a lot in my technical support for FOAs. I do over 100 FOA support for state agencies every year. And sometimes this comes up is that they're asking for a report or something that doesn't exist as an existing record, but then what they really want is a statistical summary or a compilation of some sort. So I just wanted to kind of go on the record to quote that part of FOA that says no requirement to create a new record. But I guess you're saying that this is a small number of cases that would be the case. Is that right?
Exactly.
Do you have anything to add there? Were you aware of that provision in FOA?
I wasn't aware of that provision. I was aware that our members will bend over backwards for their residents and businesses. And so it doesn't surprise me that they're going above and beyond the call of the statute. I think if we pointed that out to our members, it wouldn't change what they were doing. Again, in this situation, these are reasonable, rational requests. They are happy to fulfill them, even if it means, you know, losing a little bit of municipal funds in the process. So, but thank you for pointing that out.
Thank you, Eric. Are there additional questions? Judy Meyer.
Thanks, Neil. This is an encouraging report. So a couple of years ago, FOA was updated to provide a relief valve for government entities to go to court and get what was akin to a restraining order for repetitive or extreme FOA requests. Do you know if any of your members have used that relief valve, or could MMA do that for them?
I don't know if we could do that for them. They could certainly reach out and we could help connect them with the resources to do so. To knowledge, I don't know if anyone's used a specific relief valve. We do know of municipalities that have sought legal action. So I'm not certain if those are the same measures they're taking. I think an example would be one in Edgecombe that's made in the news recently. But unfortunately, I can't give you more of an answer than that. They should be, if that exists.
Thank you. Are there other questions for Neil Goldberg? Senator Carney.
Thank you also for this report and this information. And I'm wondering if you could give us just a little bit more context about the size of the municipal staffs that are handling these requests, because I think that that kind of helps us get a full picture of the impact that some requests have on particularly smaller municipalities.
Absolutely. I mean, it wouldn't surprise us to know that some of our towns are staffed by three or four individuals. Maybe all of them aren't even full time. And these towns are open 20 hours a week for all of the operations and services that they need to provide. And so if someone comes in with the request that is going to demand 5, 6, 7 hours, rational or unreasonable, doesn't matter, that really does cut into the workflow of that municipality. Very frequently, the individual who is authorized to do those searches, the PAO, has three or four other hats. And that's often a public facing hat. And so you're working in the back, pulling these records, making photocopies, and someone comes in to get a dog permit or a car registration. You have to drop everything you're doing. And again, that's part of the workflow that they're accustomed to, but it does, it puts a large burden when the requests are coming in from, I would say, you know, again, bad actors. And it gets even more problematic when you have to then seek a little bit of legal recourse because you infrequently have that on staff. So that's a third party serviced contract. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you.
Are there additional questions, Eric Stout?
Yeah, so in your report, it mentions the word nuisance request, and you just mentioned bad actors. I'm sure that's not your personal description, but you're reflecting on behalf of the municipal how they characterize it, right? I mean, you don't have a personal dog in the fight as a rep, but is this the description that you're hearing a lot of? Sure. How they're reacting to it.
The term bad actors is my own. Nuisance request seems to, that's a phrase that I've heard many times and read in many other reports. 2 years ago when I was before this committee, the nuisance requests I was primarily speaking on were the commercial fishing and data mining requests. And again, reasonable and rational, it just seemed like our members were committing a lot of their professional time to satisfying, you know, the request of a third party data miner. And so I think it was at that point that we termed nuisance requests, and that nature has since evolved into what we're seeing now.
Go ahead, Eric.
So would that characterize if you have like one person that's submitting dozens of requests over a short period of time? Or would that be another characterization? I want to emphasize that you said that they're really in good faith trying to be responsive.
A great example, a real estate agent is probably going to make 50 short requests a month for a property tax cards or things like that. Very reasonable. By no means would that be categorized as a nuisance request. It's people coming in and their requests are consuming the 6, 7, 8 hours of time. And they may not even genuinely want the information, but they want the municipality to expend that amount of time. We've also seen it, again, anecdotally, people saying, well, I'd like you to spend 1 hour and 59 minutes doing this request. And that sets off a red flag. Maybe they just don't want to have to pay for anything, or maybe they want to somehow consume 2 hours or just under of municipal time.
Thank you, Eric. Are there additional questions from committee members either in the room or participating remotely? I am not seeing any. I'm sorry.
One more.
Okay. You're not limited. It's okay.
Don't say that. I'm sort of putting myself in the shoes of somebody who's working in a town office. When a request comes into a town office and there needs to be either a search of electronic records or paper records that are generated need to be redacted, can you, Neil, let us know how municipalities handle that extra work that's sort of outside of the course of what they typically do in their jobs? Does that get contracted out? Do they do it in-house? Do they do it after hours?
It's probably a mixed bag. It'd be hard to generalize that. Some staff are just willing to put in the extra after hours, burn the candle at both ends. I don't imagine many towns or cities are contracting it out. That does seem a little bit more expensive than what they're already going through. But it's basic. This is a divide and conquer work task that they just make time for. And, you know, to combine some of the questions that have been asked today, when a request comes in from a resident and it is in good nature, our members will go to the end of the earth and back to fulfill that request. And that does mean maybe overtime hours. Most of our employees are salaried, and so I can't imagine that they're getting much of an additional benefit financially for performing that task.
Thank you. Neil, just a couple of questions. You said about 99% of all requests are satisfied within the 2-hour free period. Did you have any negative feedback from municipalities about the increase in free time from 1 hour to 2 hours?
No.
Okay. And for those small percentage that go over 2 hours, have you heard anything from municipalities about difficulty in being compensated for that work, or is that done up front, or?
It's a mixed bag. I think this committee has already talked about, there are times in which you send out that invoice and you just kind of have a feeling of if it's going to be approved or if not before they go through the work. And so I think there are municipalities that they have real go-getters of clerks and they start on the work and then the invoice response comes and says, actually, we'd prefer not to go ahead. And so there's some lost money or time and resources there. But collecting the payment on these has not been an issue that we've heard of.
Thanks. So even with the changes, there's been no negative fiscal impact that you've heard of from community members?
No.
Not communities?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much. Again, I'll take a look around the room to see if there are any more questions for Bill Goldberg, and I'll check the virtual room as well. And I am not seeing any. So again, thank you very much for your report. We greatly appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
The next person who will speak on this issue is participating remotely, and that is Brenda Kelty.